welcome back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on this week's show, how to solve the five-month off-season break in Major League Soccer, why the Bundesliga's elitist attitude hurts German soccer in America, could CBS bring a huge surprise for coverage of the UEFA Champions League, what other leagues could learn from NBC's Premier League Fan Fest? Plus, we have letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, without delving into this by any means, this is going to be our Election Day special. Well, it's just a coincidence that this podcast is going to be released on the day of the UK election. Lots of implications depending on which way the votes go, But thinking back over this past week, I mean, let's dive into the soccer and kind of skip the politics because I don't think anyone wants to listen to that stuff, but at least not now. What game from this past week did you watch that you loved?
I loved Gladbach-Bayern. I know there's no Boris Johnson. Okay, so I will do one election thing. I loved Gary Neville's analysis after Manchester City, Manchester United, and his comments about Prime Minister, but we'll leave the politics aside now. Gladbach-Bayern.
I missed this one, but yeah, tell us about it, Kartik.
Yeah, so here in the U.S., we had Keith Costigan and Warren Barton call the games. I can't stress, for those of you who remember Premier League Warren Barton circa 2011 on Fox Soccer Channel, or 2015 Warren Barton circa 2015 in the Champions League, how much better he is now as a co-commentator. Now, maybe it's being a co-commentator versus being a studio pundit. Maybe that's part of it, but he's really good. He's really dialed in. I think he's called so many Bundesliga game matches now, has a natural partnership with Costigan that they did a masterful job. And this match was one of the best played matches I've seen in Europe this season. Maybe it wasn't as entertaining as some of the 4-4 and 5-3 and 3-2 games we see every weekend in the Bundesliga and the Premier League and in La Liga, but it was a well-played match, a really good match in terms of the interests of the crowd, and obviously Gladbach has a great atmosphere, but also just the way I think the crowd lifted Gladbach in that match, and the broadcast was excellent from Fox. This was on FS1, so you got Lawless in the studio and Ian Joy in the studio, so it was a proper presentation. It very easily could have been on FS2 and been throwaway with the international feed. So part of the reason this match was so good is it was on FS1, and when matches are on FS1, I think we have this conversation every week, Chris, they do a good job. When matches are on other Fox channels, they're just throwaways. They just flip the switch. So this was a good, great match, good football. Gladbach, top of the table. They come back and beat Bayern 2-1, and I really enjoyed the broadcast and the match.
So I had every intention of watching this match, I think on Thursday or Friday, looking ahead the previews for the weekend. This is one of the matches on my list. And then I watched Saturday morning, a normal ritual for me, as it is for a lot of soccer fans in the U.S., I watched the early kickoff, which was Everton against Chelsea. I mean, Jim Proudfoot, Matt Holland. And actually, this game was really, really good. I mean, this was full-on Duncan Ferguson, some good analysis from, I think there was the two Robbies, or Kyle. But whoever was in the studio is good stuff. Then I had a leave for maybe about an hour to take one of my daughters to a soccer game down probably about 5 or 10 minutes away from here. I came back, I left the TV on in the house because I wanted my kids to, if they came across the television, they can watch some more soccer while I was away. That's the kind of dad I am. But anyway, I came back in and it was Bournemouth against Liverpool and I was sucked right in. I was watching the game, watching that one, of course, one-sided match. And then I just realized, and it was too late, it was basically, I missed the Gladbach Bayern game. But that's the thing, Kartik, I think, in many ways, about the Premier League is, yes, it's not the best league in the world, but in terms of the coverage, in terms of the whole show, the whole production, in terms of Premier League Mornings, Premier League Live, My Premier League Morning, is that they suck you into the broadcast, and it's so easy to stay with that broadcast. I mean, the 7:30 game between Everton and Chelsea ends exactly at 9:30, exactly at the time that the Bundesliga kicks off on their Saturday morning game. That's the perfect time for a half an hour to watch the Bundesliga, and then hopefully beyond that point, keep on watching it for the whole 90 minutes. But it's so, I mean, to me, the NBC's coverage is so good that sometimes I forget about the Bundesliga. I'm just watching the Premier League, listening to the analysis. And one of the other reasons too, Kartik, I mentioned this too, is because one of our, somebody I admire a lot, somebody who is one of the best commentators in the business, Derek Ray. I mean, Derek Ray oftentimes does commentary for the Premier League and the Bundesliga. Well, he tweeted something out, I think it was during the Bournemouth-Liverpool game, and he said, the Bundesliga simply doesn't need any marketing or advertising this season. Speaks for itself. If you're ignoring it, you're missing out. And to me, yes, sure, the Bournemouth-Liverpool game was a very one-sided affair and was not the best example of a Premier League match. But to me, I love Derek Ray. I have a lot of admiration for him. But this tweet sounded incredibly elitist. And the reason being that I think that he's got it wrong on this one. Yes, the Bundesliga is one of the best leagues in the world. But that's more the reason to actually do the advertising and do the marketing. And not to say that it doesn't need any advertising or marketing. I mean, I get what Derek was trying to say. Is it's so good that people should be watching it. And you shouldn't be ignoring it. And if you are ignoring it, you're missing out. Yes, yes. But the reality is, we know from the TV ratings and from the TV numbers, the number of people watching the Bundesliga is less than 100,000 people, probably for this game. Probably, I don't know, 75,000 people watch this game. The Bournemouth-Liverpool game would have been probably about 500,000 people watching this game. And to me, I guess what Derek fails to understand is that the soccer viewing experience, a lot of it is the connection to the broadcast people, the actual talent in the studio, but it's also a connection to the teams and the clubs and the history. And that's something that's been established over a decade or a few decades, where a lot of people have grown up watching, you know, Liverpool, Man City, even whatever team they support. That connection is there. And with the Bundesliga, except for a very small portion of people in the US, there is that connection isn't there. Kartik, I know you're a big fan of Derek Ray too, but do you think he was on point on this one?
Yeah, I think he's definitely on point. I'm finding it hard to watch the Premier League when I watch the Bundesliga. I just think the qualities and the competitiveness of matches have been that much better this season. That having been said, I understand the Premier League has a lot of has done such a great job of marketing in this country over the course of about 15 to 20 years now, whereas the Bundesliga is the last 4 or 5 years. La Liga, it's really been more intense the last 4 or 5 years. So I understand why, but I would also say, Chris, and I complain about this a lot, there were a lot of Premier League fans in this country who have bought a lot of hype and that they don't want to be exposed to football in other places. They just, and if you say you're interested in watching Mönchengladbach play Bayer Leverkusen, they laugh at you. And they say, well, I mean, Bournemouth and Watford are better than those teams. And yeah, I guess popular sentiment wins, right? There's no question the Premier League wins the ratings, wins the conversation. There's a lot more tweets from the U.S. about the Premier League than there are about other professional football leagues from around the world. But I do think a lot of the attitude of American viewers is, well, the Premier League is the best, and we don't care about anything else. And that bothers me. And that doesn't just apply to the Bundesliga. I would say through the years it's been more cognitive dissonance towards La Liga than anything else. And when I would make the point about the quality of La Liga, I would get all kinds of ridiculous myopic arguments thrown back at me. I totally get where Derek's coming from. I mean, I understand the reasons why the Premier League is more popular, but I think that there's just a lot of Premier League fans who won't open their eyes to anything other than the Premier League. You think MLS, and I know we complain about MLS fans and U.S. soccer fans a lot, but to me, Premier League fans in the U.S., I don't think Premier League fans around the world, I think a lot of the Premier League fans in the U.S. US are just as bad, if not worse, than MLS fans. That's my opinion. And it's an opinion, you know, Chris, I've held for a long time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too, that marketing and advertising does play a big role. I mean, that's one of the reasons that the Premier League is so popular in the United States. That's one of the reasons that NBC does such a good job of broadcasting this, is that they're a marketing machine. They're an advertising machine. The Bundesliga is not. And Fox Sports isn't either. And going back to Derek's comment about it doesn't need marketing or advertising. The Bundesliga is so good, it speaks for itself. I mean, if that's the case, we'd all be driving Volvos. We'd be watching television on Betamax and all these things. Like, some of the best quality, the best products in the world. They don't exist, I mean, just because, I mean, they're the best in the world. I mean, you really do need advertising and marketing. And that's something, too, and we talked about this on last week's podcast, is that Fox fails in the communications department, in the promotion department, in actually kind of creating a consistent broadcasting, so we know when games are, we know, you know, there's a connection with the studio talent. It's all over the place, and that's one of the reasons why, one of many reasons why the Bundesliga is not as big as it should be. It should be bigger than what it is, but it's not. And to change that does require advertising, does require marketing. And I know Derek's probably saying this because he's saying it's so good because it doesn't even need it, when the reality is that I'm sure he knows it too, that it does need some. But it needs a lot more than that. If anything, it needs more than the Premier League. That's my take on that. So I got a little bit upset about that on Saturday morning. My favorite game of the week, Kartik, was Lazio against Juventus, and this was
this is a good one too.
An absolutely incredible game. Dave Farrar and Stuart Robson commentating. What a game. It's 1-1. Cuadrado gets sent off. And then Lazio scores a wonderful goal to make it 2-1 to Lazio. Then Lazio gets a penalty, and Chesney saves it to keep it 2-1 to Lazio. And then a late winner, a late one, to make it 3-1 to Lazio. Just a sensational match. Highest quality football I've seen in a long time. Back and forth. Just the passion was incredible. And great commentary. I was just so enthusiastic about this game. Absolutely fantastic. The other one, too, just to throw this in, Kartik, was not the best technical game, but it was one of the most enjoyable games I watched, other than Lazio against Juventus. And that was the Scottish League Cup final, Celtic against Rangers. Watched this on Sunday morning on BR Live. It was very reminiscent to me of 90s English football. A lot of long balls into the box, very physical, extremely physical. At times, I mean, the pitch at Hampden Park looks like a rugby pitch. And there's no VAR in the Scottish League Cup final. Celtic's goal should not have counted. The player was offside when the ball was struck. And then Fredo Morales wins a penalty for Rangers, and then he misses it. It could have been the equaliser. It was a good match. It was a really good match, and it was interesting too, because BT Sport did the broadcast, and that was what BR Live used for this one. And Chris Sutton on the co-commentary, as annoying as ever. So what about you, Kartik? Anything else that popped out that stood out
This weekend? I guess there were a number of entertaining matches during the weekend, and I would include Lazio Juventus in that. I actually have seen some entertaining games in the championship recently, so I wanted to mention that ESPN Plus, even though they're showing fewer championship matches than they did the first year when I guess we're still on ESPN3, right? Then ESPN, they're showing enough, and there's some good entertaining football going on in that division again this year. And Leeds is on a 7-game winning streak, so they're good to watch. And West Brom under Slaven Bilic are playing a much more open attacking style, and those are the two top teams. I mentioned obviously the Roma Inter match, which I ended up watching after the fact on ESPN Plus. It was discussed, obviously, I said, I think most of our listeners were, and obviously you were, Chris, too, by the Black Friday thing, and had told myself, oh, I'm not going to watch Italian football anymore. You know, I held my boycott for like 3 hours because I decided I wanted to watch this match after all, and then watched pieces of Lazio Juventus on the weekend. But yeah, so it was a pretty interesting weekend.
Yeah, just a couple more things to point out too in terms of some of my highlights or interesting observations from this past week was watching Arsenal against Brighton and Martin Tyler doing the commentary on this one. And just to show you once again too in terms of the impact of VAR and what it's having on commentary is that David Luiz scores for Arsenal and Martin Tyler says he believes Arsenal lead 2-1. So something that's really kind of like just really, I mean, yeah, blasé. I mean, David Luiz scores an incredible goal. It's more he believes Arsenal lead 2-1, only for the goal to be disallowed due to offside. And not only does it take the passion out of the players, but it takes the passion out of the commentary too. Because, I mean, there's Martin Tyler in the past before VAR. I mean, looking at the linesmen's, looking at the referees in terms of what they're doing. That would have been probably a goal, and the goal would have stood, and he would have been a lot more excited, as would have David Luiz, as would have the fans in the stadium, as would we, the actual viewers. And then Friday was Ian Joy doing the world feed, doing the co-commentary for the Bundesliga, Frankfurt against Hertha Berlin. Really good game, actually. This one was 2-2, the second game in a week from the Bundesliga that was a really good game. The Manchester derby, not really much to say about that one, but I will say that TNT midweek during the UEFA Champions League, I just wonder at this point if they're going through the motions. I mean, what's the incentive for them to try hard, because they know that they don't have the Champions League. They have it next season, but not the season after that. And just one example of just, just the amateur really production from them was during the Salzburg-Liverpool game is in the 21st minute of the game. You're listening to the commentary. Salzburg's on the attack. It looks like they might score. And all of a sudden, they start playing the UEFA Champions League commercial break music over the top of the commentary.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, this, I mean, how can a mistake like that? And this is not the first time this has happened. I think it happened last week too, or the last match week. But I don't know if they're asleep at the wheel or what. And the actual commentary or the actual talent in terms of their analysis, pre-match, post-match, halftime, I'll catch it now and again, but it's okay. It's nothing special, but... I've pretty much tuned out, and I'm pretty much watching Zona Football from Tudoene in terms of watching the Champions League and all the goals going in, not understanding much of the Spanish, but still loving the passion and loving the excitement.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Tudoene has got such good coverage right now of Champions League, and they're showing Europa League, which TNT isn't. I wonder how many people are still... still on board with watching Turner. I mean, I guess the ratings are okay, but it makes me wonder. I mean, soccer people, I think many soccer people have made the switch, even if they don't know as good Spanish.
Yeah, well, that's the question, and that's something I mentioned in the lead to this podcast, is that could CBS bring a surprise for the coverage of the UEFA Champions League? And you have to wonder, Kartik, if CBS is contemplating the possibility, perhaps, of starting up their coverage of the UEFA Champions League maybe a season early. Could they possibly be thinking about, you know what, you mean, Turner, you mean, has one more season after this one to show the Champions League, but what if we go to them and offer them a deal where we will acquire it a year early and then, you mean, have 4 years of UEFA Champions League coverage? I mean, how much of an incentive does Turner have to continue it? And that's the thing, though, too. I mean, that I'm sure CBS could do a really good job pretty quickly in terms of their infrastructure, in terms of their talent that they have available to them, and, you know, everything that they do. They could turn that around pretty quickly. And you have to wonder, and again, I haven't heard anything about this. It is interesting still that CBS still has not officially announced their coverage of the UEFA Champions League. Neither has UEFA. The last I heard was that they were still in the legal side of things in terms of going through all the paperwork. But this delay is interesting. I mean, it could possibly paint a picture of CBS perhaps getting it a little bit early. Again, we don't know anything at this point until we find out some more details. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, and MLS has announced that the next MLS Cup final will be on November 7th, which is earlier than it's been maybe ever. The complaints from many in the MLS community is that the season is now too short and that teams that don't make the playoffs will now have 5 months off with no soccer. A lot of discussion and debate about this week, Chris. In addition, I would mention that while there is in MLS the requirement under the CBA that teams continue to train through the playoffs – And they begin training in early January or mid-January, there will be months without competitive matches for some teams unless they schedule friendlies or something else.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the Major League Soccer calendar and you think that, I mean, if a team doesn't make the playoffs and they finish their season in late August, early September, and then the season doesn't start again until February, I mean, that's 5 months off. What's your solution for this, Kartik? Do you have any thoughts in terms of how they can...
Well, part of the problem is the CBA, because, as I said, the CBA restricts when they can train. So when MLS Cup happens on November 7th, MLS teams are done training after that. So the teams that don't make the playoffs, I think a lot of people don't realize this, they continue to train. Now, you could say they're training aimlessly because they don't have a match for however many months, but they continue to train until... the end of the season, the technical end of the season, which is MLS Cup. Then they all start training the same date in mid-January, which is part of the reason why when we talked about the Bundesliga, you and I have both gone to Germany, you more recently than I, in anticipation of German clubs coming to Florida. This year it's going to be Eintracht and Hertha playing at Allianz Stadium in St. Petersburg. They always have to play NASL or USL teams. They couldn't play MLS teams because MLS teams are restricted in when they can actually train and play based on their collective bargaining agreement. So they would not be able, Orlando City would not be able to start training until after Hertha Berlin and Eintracht Frankfurt leave, whereas the Tampa Bay Rowdies can start training whenever. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers, when I worked with them and they played Schalke and Shakhtar Donetsk over their winter breaks, were able to start training January 3rd.
Except this January, though, which is NYCFC are going to be playing in the Florida Cup. Originally, it was, I think it was Locomotive
Moscow. But that's after the start date. I said it's like January 12th or 15th.
The 15th.
So the Hertha Berlin Eintracht match is before that start date. So they couldn't have allowed Orlando or NYCFC to play Eintracht.
Right.
But I believe that Florida Cup weekend is January 19th or something, right? Yeah. Yeah, so it's right after. So they would have only trained for 4 or 5 days. But
right.
The point is, not only are they not playing competitive matches, they're not allowed to train for a big chunk of that time, which means they can't play in friendly. So it's a really serious problem, Chris, and it's got to be solved.
Yes, CBA aside, I mean, to me, Kartik, the solution to this is get rid of the playoffs. I mean, it's one of those things that the whole reason for having the playoffs. That Major League Soccer created this was to have something that was familiar to American traditional sports fans as far as NFL or, I mean, baseball or basketball. And in soccer, to me, it doesn't make as much sense. I mean, at this point in time, we're up to, 30 teams. Hercules Gomez, I think today or yesterday, reported that he believes that they're going to stop at 32 and have it very similar to the NFL. Given Don Garber's background, who used to work for the NFL in Europe. But whether it's 32 or whether it's 30 or whether it's 36, whatever it goes to, I mean, to me, it's ridiculous that they even have the playoffs. I mean, split it into the Western Conference, Eastern Conference, and have it be a league. Have it be that, I mean, those teams from that conference play each other. And the top team wins the Western Conference League, the top team in the other league wins the Eastern Conference League, and maybe you have a final between the two. But make it competitive throughout the entire season rather than fans tuning out. For most of the regular season, because there's not much of an incentive to watch it if most of the teams are going to make the playoffs anyway. But anyway, that's my take. I mean, the CBA definitely has to be addressed. There's a lot of issues in terms of charter flights and lots of other things that hopefully the MLS Players Union will push pretty heavy on this one.
But, you know what's going to happen, though? Don Garber is going to claim cry poverty, you know, when...
Oh, he already has. Yeah.
We know it. We already know how this is going to play out, but I hope the players' union's a little stronger this time.
Yeah, and a little bit smarter, too, I think. All right, let's move on to the next news item, Kartik. What are the names Nigel Riococca and Jay Demerit say to you, Kartik?
They say to me two guys that have played both in the Premier League and in MLS. What else? Nigel Riococca came through West Ham's academy. I don't know. Where's the correlation?
All right. Well, these two blokes and many more are going to be at the Premier League Fan Fest this weekend in Miami, Miami Beach. Would you go to see Nigel Riococca?
No. I mean, I saw him play. I saw him play with both West Ham. I saw him play with West Ham, and I saw him play with the Montreal. Was it with the Montreal Impact?
He played
for a couple teams in MLS, right?
Right. Yeah.
And it was important.
And then
Jay Demerit is really cool. I think that's a good get for the Fan Fest. I just don't know that Nigel Riococca is particularly particularly interesting for anyone.
Well, the interesting thing, he lives in Florida, which I didn't know until recently. The reason I mentioned this in terms, it's not going to be about Nigel Riococca and Jay Demerit, even though they're both fantastic ex-professionals. But I'll be there, Kartik. I know that I'll be there Friday to do some interviews, and then there in Miami Beach Saturday and Sunday. This will be my first Premier League Fan Fest, and it's coming to Florida, so I have to go. Are you busy this weekend, or are you going to be going?
It appears like I'm not going to be going. I was going to be going until this afternoon, and two things popped up at my work at PlayerMaker. One is a demo we're doing, and the second thing is a U.S. club soccer. I might still make it, but we'll see.
Okay.
All right, and actually, I should mention U.S. club soccer thing is they're in partnership with La Liga, who has opened an academy in Miami. So in a way, the Premier League is invading La Liga's turf. La Liga has put a marker in the ground in this area. They've got their league's first academy in North America in Miami. Valencia, which is obviously one of the big clubs, already has an academy in Pembroke Pines nearby, and Barcelona has an academy here. So it is kind of La Liga territory they're invading. And of course, BN is based in Miami, and they're La Liga's partner and broadcaster.
Yep. And one more news item, Kartik, before we move on.
Yeah, so Red Bee and Spring Media have launched a women's football streaming service, which is big news. W United is what it's called, and this is going to give a global reach. It's going to be a global service, and it's an OTT service which is dedicated exclusively to women's football. It'll be the first one like that. So kind of an exciting development. And it's called, if I remember, it's called W United, yes.
That's right. Yeah, and it's going to launch in the first quarter of 2020. It's going to offer over 300 live matches, highlights, catch-up shows, and documentaries covering women's football from around the world. So that'll be interesting to see if it's going to be a paid service or a free service.
Because look, I have to admit, and this is something that maybe a lot of people miss. I mean, I think people who follow me on Twitter notice I'm tweeting a lot more about the WSL in the UK, in England, this year, and it's because I have the FA Player, which is a free streaming service that the FA got behind in promoting the women's game in England. So the English FA, I think right now there's an accessibility thing with women's football where they're trying to make everything free. And I'm loving it. I'm consuming so much more women's football content than I did, let's say, 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. So I think this might be free, and they're promising documentaries. They're promising bumper programs. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's move on to TV ratings. And Some big ones out of Liga MX in the United States. 1.3 million people tuned in to watch Necaxa against Monterrey on Univision and Tudoene on Saturday night, which was the second leg of the semifinal. Monterrey advancing there. Then we had Club America against Monarcas Morelia on Tudoene on Sunday night, and Club America advancing from there. So now we have the Monterrey against Club America final of the Liga MX, which is going to start on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, December 26, and then finish up on that Sunday in what should be a massive audience, I'm sure, on Univision. One more number for me, Kartik, unless there's anything else that jumps out at you, but that's the Manchester Derby. This one was on NBCSN. It wasn't on the over-the-air NBC network because I think it was golf was on, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah, the Tiger Woods tournament, the hero.
Right. So the Man City-Man United game on NBCSN and Telemundo averaged 999,000 viewers, so just short of a million viewers, which is pretty darn impressive, given that it was on NBCSN and not over the NBC.
Yeah, that's a high watermark for NBC and for NBCSN. And by the way, that's more viewers than the NBC match the previous week got between Watford and Southampton, I believe it was. Yeah,
that's right. All right, let's move on to the listener mailbag. First up is Chris Day. Hi, Christopher and Kartik. Was listening to last week's podcast about NBCSN's overlapping coverage of the midweek games. Agreed with you that Tuesdays and Wednesdays were excellent, and it was great to have some bonus coverage. However, had a question concern about Thursday. I wasn't watching live, but caught up on Thursday evening after a long day at work, and the last few minutes of the Arsenal-Brighton match were cut off. My DVR recording went straight to their car auction program about around the 88th minute mark, and thus I was left in the dark about the ending. Did anyone else experience this, or was it just something strange with the DVR using Sling? Missed the podcast not being on for a couple of weeks, so glad to have you guys back as part of my my end of the work week routine. Well, Chris, thanks for having us be part of your routine. In answer to your question there, I mean, I was watching the live match, and we saw the full 90 minutes and then post-match. I can only just think that maybe it was just a mistake either on NBCSN side or on Sling side, where the timing of when it was supposed to end ended abruptly. So it may have been, I can't even remember now, but maybe there was an injury in this game, and maybe it went into injury time a little bit longer than usual. And a lot of it is based kind of is automated, that there's nobody there actually stopping it. Stopping the recording right at the end of the game. Next up is Dana Miner. Dana says, I know this may be outside your remit, but have you ever thought of doing something on the growth of fan-generated punditry and its a disruptive effect? I'm referring specifically to Arsenal Fan TV and the backlash it seems to have generated amongst the pundit class in England. Last year, Phil Neville attacked the channel, and just last week, the failed former owner of Crystal Palace, which I'm guessing is Simon Jordan, attacked the channel and called the fans who comment on YouTube morons. The success of Arsenal Fan TV has spawned several imitators like Redman TV. Do you think the growth of these influencers is going to have an effect, good or bad, on the media landscape? Kartik, you want to have a first crack at this?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on it myself. You know, I and there are more and more, and actually there are apps now coming up and services that that promote fan punditry and fan alternative fan commentary. I'm of two minds about it, and maybe it's me being both kind of in the media world and at the same time a fan. But I see this from both sides. I do understand the attacks on it, but the thing I will say is that there's a growing proliferation. So expect more of it rather than less into the future.
Yeah, I'm all for it personally. I think Redman TV, I've watched that one quite a few times, and they do some really good work, some good interviews. I think I watched one recently, I think last week, about Anfield and the expansion of the stadium. where they interviewed, I think, one of the, it probably wasn't an architect, but one of the people responsible for managing the project. That was good. Arsenal Fan TV, I think I've spoken to Rob in the past, that runs Arsenal Fan TV, and really kind of a trendsetter in terms of what he was doing. Yes, a lot of people make fun of it and kind of think it went overboard. A lot of it is because of the characters in the crowd. Some of them which are really funny, some of them are really peculiar, to say the least. Overall, though, I think it's positive. I mean, Lawrence McKenna, who used to host this podcast, now does several different kind of fan punditry, whether it's The True Geordie or other types of shows. They're informative. In many ways, sometimes they're better than broadcast television. And I think that's part of the reason, too, that there has been a little bit of backlash. So I think Dana mentions, I think it's Simon Jordan, who is now on TalkSport. But I can see Simon saying something like that just to be, because he feels probably threatened that some of these fans know more about the game than he does, or they may have some better opinions. I mean, because if you listen to him on TalkSport, he's full of himself. Yes.
No, he's, yeah.
He has some good things to say now and again, but I mean, Phil Neville, I respect a lot more in terms of his knowledge and his tactical analysis as a co-commentator. It's been a while since we've had a chance to listen to him. But, you mean, I'm not sure in particular why he attacked the channel. But overall, I think in some ways that the traditional broadcasters feel threatened that these fans have, in many ways, more of a base, more of a viewership than some of the television stations have. If you look at some of these broadcasts, you look at some of the shows that Fox does in terms of broadcasting, I don't know, the Club World Cup, the FIFA Club World Cup, and how many viewers are watching a game, and then compare that to some of the YouTube channels, even on the soccer side, and how many views that those get. Those are far greater than some of the actual match coverage of some of the games. So, good question, Dana. It's definitely within our remit, and we haven't done anything in depth. But this is pretty in depth in terms of our honest feedback. Next up is Leonard, and he says a lot of people were impressed by Amazon's coverage of the Premier League midweek in the UK. On Amazon Prime Video, but I personally was a little bit disappointed, and here's why. I watched the game between Liverpool and Everton and planned to watch the match between Man United and Spurs later, but throughout the game, the commentator reported all the changes that occurred in the other games. It was not a studio after the game or during the break, and it was not possible to escape the spoilers. And that's something, too, that... I mean, we've been experiencing this for, a decade through Fox Soccer Channel originally, and even through ESPN and now through NBC in terms of spoilers. At this point in time, we've gotten accustomed to that because we have had access to all the games. And this comment from Leonard is kind of an example of something that the Brits aren't used to. They aren't used to having access to every single game that's being played at the same time. They're used to the BBC Match of the Day experience where BBC will go out of their way not to mention any of the scores of any of the games, who won what, until the broadcast of Match of the Day later in that day. So it's a completely different experience. And probably something that Amazon may not have been actually aware of, that it would be a big deal. But I can imagine, too, in the UK, it would be a very big deal. Next up, Kartik, I'll have you take this one. It's from the original Tom. Would you please talk about the FIFA Club World Cup? I'd also be interested in your thoughts about this competition.
They obviously want to make it a much bigger deal, FIFA, than they have, and are in the process of expanding it, although there's been some pushback on that, obviously. I've just never gotten interested in this for some reason. I mean, maybe I will when it becomes a summer event, but then it just adds more fixture congestion. 2021 is when that is going to supposedly happen. I don't know. It's just something that also throws off the fixture fixtures for teams in Europe, the one European team, and it comes right after the Copa Lib final, so it's almost anticlimactic a lot of times for the South American Copa Libertadores final winner. So I've never really gotten into it, to be honest with you.
Did you ever get into the Intercontinental Cup?
Yeah, that was I did. That was a one-off game. It was between the European winner and the South American winner. It was between the Champions League winner and the winner of Copa Libertadores. It was in Tokyo. Yep. And I actually did like that match, that thing. I think this Club World Cup thing, like I said, it's anticlimactic. Although there was recently, right, there was an African team that got, or a team from Africa or Asia that got to the final.
Yeah, I think it was the last one where it was, it could have been Real Madrid against River Plate, if I remember correctly, and it ended up being, I think, a River Plate against somebody else. Or maybe River Plate got knocked out in the semifinals. But that's my thing, though, Kartik, is if I ask someone from South America, if someone who's big into soccer, and I'll mention kind of the Intercontinental Cup or the FIFA Club World Cup, and not to stereotype, but they make a big deal out of it. This is a big deal. This is like, oh my gosh, a match between the European champion and the South American champion in the Intercontinental Cup played in the early 2000s. Massive, you mean huge. Forever and ever, no one in Europe cares about this. There's absolutely zero interest in this. In a game that's been played, I mean, during the middle of the season. I mean, next week it's Liverpool plays on a Tuesday in the League Cup, and then they play the next day in the FIFA Club World Cup. They're taking two squads,
right? They're going to split their team.
But even if they didn't have to split their team, there would be zero interest in this tournament. To me, at the end of the day, what this is FIFA saying, "Hey, we've seen this International Champions Cup, ICC." Taking off, and yes, last year they didn't do so well, but in previous years, this has become the thing where it's a competition worldwide with the best teams from around the world playing. And yes, it isn't perfect by any means, but this is the FIFA coming into this and saying, hey, we want to get in on this game.
Well, yeah, they need more European teams in it to make it relevant to a grander audience, that's why they're doing that.
Right, yeah. So going back to the original Tom... yeah, I mean, the games have kicked off on the Wednesday, and Liverpool will play next week. Flamengo plays next week. I just have very little interest in this. And if listeners do have interest in this, I have no complaints about that. More power to you. I just have, you know, this has no relevance to me. If Liverpool wins it, it doesn't change anything. I mean, I don't have any more appreciation for Liverpool because they do that. I mean, it's rather meaningless.
I don't even remember who won it. I know some years the Copa Lib winner wins it, some years it's the Champions League winner. You know, it's one or the other, right?
It's usually the South American teams that win it, though.
And I think it's more often than not the South American teams. Last year, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and that's something, too. Maybe a couple of years ago, speaking to, I think, Juan Arango, who's been on this podcast many times, and works for TUDN and has worked for ESPN in the past. And we had this discussion, too, about that. And he was saying, like, oh, isn't this incredible that the South American teams just keep on beating the European teams? And I said, nobody cares. I mean, the European teams don't care. The players don't care. It's meaningless. All right.
No, I think it's like international football in general. I mean, international football in non-tournament situations are taken a lot more seriously by fans in South America than they are by fans in Europe.
Yeah.
And I'm talking including qualifiers in that.
Except, I think this whole Brazil World Tour that they've been doing now for, like, what, 5 years? I mean, where they're just, I mean, basically haven't played in Brazil for, it seems like, eons.
Right.
And, playing in, I don't know, England, playing in Sweden, playing in Doha. I think that's diluted it a lot. I mean, every international break at this point, it seems that Brazil plays Argentina.
No,
like
I was
Uruguay.
About to say, yeah, that's over-saturation.
I mean, it's
match.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, oversaturation there, definitely. Last but not least, Robert says, Christopher again mentioned MLS not using promotion relegation. Well, since they are franchises that are mentioned that go for hundreds of millions of dollars in expansion fees in Major League Soccer, and USL franchises go for $10 million, how would that work? The setup in the US is not the same as in other leagues. So why is this topic not put to rest?
Perhaps if American teams were more successful in developing players, if American teams were more successful in international competition, if cities that had lower division teams and well-supported lower division teams were able to sustain that level of support and investment in a closed system, perhaps this discussion would go away. But they are franchises. Actually, MLS teams are not franchises. They're clubs in a single entity model. USL, the second division, does have is a franchise-based league like NFL, NBA, NHL. The construct of MLS is completely different than even American pro sports leagues. But one is a franchise-based league, one's a single entity-based league. So it's difficult to do pro rel in franchise-based leagues or single entity-based leagues. But those leagues are underperforming what the experts believe they would perform as optimally as business in an open market. And there is a player development problem in this country. There is a problem in terms of our performances for those clubs, those MLS clubs in international tournaments, because of the roster restrictions that come with the single entity model. So that's why the debate's not put to bed. The debate will never be put to bed until the United States performs consistently better in international tournaments. MLS teams perform consistently better in international tournaments, and the television ratings are where they need to be in order for these leagues to generate lots of television revenue like other leagues in this country and other sports do, and football leagues around the world.
So my take on this is a little bit different, Kartik, in that why should we care about these franchise owners anyway? I mean, it's almost like a charity case where, you mean, soccer fans in the United States are kind of brainwashed into thinking like, oh, no, we have to protect these multi-billionaires to make sure that they don't go out of business or that they don't lose any money. Like, no, we can't change anything, because if we change something that the Kraft family gets rid of the New England Revolution, you mean, soccer in Connecticut is gonna just crash, and you mean the future of soccer in the United States is going to be in peril. Which is absolutely ridiculous, though, too, that's an average soccer fan, a fan of Major League Soccer, has such a concern for these multi-billionaires that they want to protect everything and help them out, when it's almost like a charity case that the way they're treating it. And to me, it's like, you know, if a lot of these clubs went out of business, there would be plenty more lined up to go ahead and move into the market. If the rules were different, if it wasn't a single entity, if it wasn't the way it's structured today, which is to me not the way it should be structured. It should be an open system, and allow it to be more capitalistic in terms of opportunities for clubs to move in or clubs to start up and build their own team, build their own fan base, start from the grassroots level rather than the top down. So for Robert to say, which I understand his opinion, but I'm not going to put this to rest just because I don't want to mess with the multi-billionaires and kind of mess with their system. If anything, I want to shake it up and start from the grassroots and support that level.
The thing you and I fail to kind of comprehend, Chris, or not we comprehend it, we fail to kind of understand, is why there's such an affinity for these multi-billionaires among American soccer fandom.
Yeah.
Why there's such a desire to protect these guys.
Right, exactly. And I think it is, I mean, in many ways...
You're protecting them from market forces is what you're doing. You're essentially allowing them to mitigate any sort of risk associated with investment. I think that it goes back to kind of the mentality of a lot of American investors. They want to mitigate risk. So
yeah.
They want all these protections.
And it's essentially a monopoly. I mean, if you're a professional soccer team in the United States.
Well, it is. I mean, I want to just point out the NASL lawsuit, which we've talked about on the show before. I think it's still got incredible potential to shake up the system. Unfortunately, the NASL itself has been sacrificed in the process. But I think you're going to find out that there are monopolistic practices going on in U.S. soccer based on what comes out of that lawsuit.
Yeah, and my thing, though, too, is what happens when the expansion fees run out? So whether it's for USL or for Major League Soccer, and there's really no more cities to go into.
Well, yeah, let me just jump in. Sorry, Chris, but our colleague, our friend Nipun Chopra, used to co-host the show, has a fantastic report about USL, their expansion fees, and how essentially all their revenue comes from that, more or less. There's, I would suggest people check it out on Sock Takes. Just was published yesterday, on Wednesday.
Absolutely. All right, Robert. Well, good question. It got us fired up. Obviously, we don't agree on this one, but let's move on. So we want you to have your say. So whether you agree or disagree with us, have any questions about streaming or watching soccer, or about TV rights, or about the future of soccer in the United States, whatever it may be, as long as it relates to watching soccer on TV, online or apps, let us know. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, the funny thing is, too, I just checked this week for the reviews on the podcast on iTunes. At the last three reviews we've gotten 1 star out of 5. I think we're upsetting a lot of people. And I wear that as a badge of pride in that we can invoke such a reaction among soccer fans. Obviously, listeners don't always agree with the points I make, and vice versa with you, Kartik. But we call it the way we see it. We're being as honest as can be. You're listening to us, and if you met us in the bar or met us at the fan fest this weekend in Miami Beach, this is who we are. We're not putting on an act such as some of the TV personalities do, where they pick a side, and even though if they don't agree with it, they just pick it just to have a debate. All right, Kartik, heading into this weekend, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.